Jason Tinney, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And I should say congratulations on this collection of short stories, Ripple Meets the Deep. This is a great title, and in fact, it's also the title of your last story in this book. This is a fishing term, but it's obviously an expression ripe for metaphorical interpretation as well.
Yeah, it is. It's a phrase that I learned ice fishing with some folks up on Deep Creek Lake in Garrett County. The way the phrase was told to me originally was we're on a channel ice fishing, and we want to fish where the deep meets the ripple, which is the transition between the shallow water, the ripple meeting the bank, and then this drop off where the fish like to go up and down to maneuver. And I just thought it was a great turn of phrase, and then I turned it around to Ripple Meets the Deep, so I wasn't completely stealing somebody's line.
It is a beautiful expression, though, when you start getting into the characters in these stories and the pasts that they're dealing with, that they're sort of relishing and remembering or being haunted by. Let me just start, Jason, by asking you to read a bit of the story that bears the title of your collection, Ripple Meets the Deep. You've got two characters in this story, a grown man who goes out to visit his older father. Three characters, I should say, because the father has a dog at this point.
Right.
And they're going out ice fishing.
Right. So I'll pick it up when they're about to leave from Randall, the father's home in Western Maryland, to a spot on Deep Creek Lake, Garrett County. Just after 6 in the morning, the moon still hanging in the sky with the sun rising in the east, the three of them, father, son, Jubal in the middle, took off in Randall's pickup truck headed for the super secret fishing spot, as Randall called it. They looked like an advertisement for Bass Pro Shop. Randall was not a talker. He was prickly, easily agitated, and had not mellowed in his 60s. Wayne, his son, made the decision before he arrived that he would not initiate a conversation unless the moment absolutely presented itself. In the past, idle chatter when they were together only resulted in more prolonged periods of silence. It was better to speak only when spoken to. However, after a few miles of driving, Wayne seized on a topic he felt might have traction. "Where'd you get Jubal?" he said. The dog pricked his ears and looked at Wayne, his tongue hanging out. "I found him online. He's rescued. Went down to South Carolina to get him." "That's a long haul for a dog," Wayne said. "Not that bad. Worth it." Randall scratched the back of Jubal's neck, his eyes still on the road. "Spent 10 minutes with him, and I was convinced. They found him wandering around some railroad tracks, scavenging for food. When I got him home, he ate so damn fast, I had to put a metal ball in the bowl just to slow him down. Probably thought it might be his last meal." Wayne stared out the window. Log home sat off the road, hemmed in by thick woods, suggesting a rugged frontier lifestyle. But these houses started at $400,000 and were designed with every amenity found in civilization. "What's the mix?" Wayne said.
"Mix?"
Randall gave Wayne a look as if he'd just been insulted. "Jubal's a Carolina dog."
"A what?"
"A Carolina dog." "He looks like a dingo," Wayne said. "He is. This particular breed is also known as the American Dingo. They live out in the wild." "Well, if he's wild, he's got to be some kind of mix," Wayne said.
"Well, Carolina dogs can have all kinds of bloodlines."
"So essentially he's a particular breed of mutt," Randall bristled, "if you want to be crass about it." Randall and Wayne turned down a dirt road and arrived at a spot that opened to a wide swath of Deep Creek Lake, the shoreline bordered by hemlock spruces, red and white pines. Tucked in the cradle of Savage to the north, Backbone to the south, the clouds left shadow bruises upon the mountains, 3,000 feet above sea level.
Jason Tinney, reading from his short story collection, Ripple Meets the Deep. I just love the image of these two guys once they get out onto that sheet of ice over the lake, and they've got this great mysterious depth of dark waters literally just below them. And you can hear that in that exchange of dialogue that you just read an excerpt from, that, you know, there is a big well of things that they will never say to each other.
Yeah, sure. And I think a lot of father-son relationships are like that, and they are sitting on a frozen lake, 19 inches of ice, and it's there when you ice fish, there is a lot of solitude, and I mean, I guess that can be awkward or uncomfortable if you're not catching tons of fish.
But, you know, I guess I can't remember if it's Wayne or Randall who makes the observation that there's something really sort of blessed about having that kind of solitude and being able to sort of enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, it's Randall.
The dad.
Randall, the dad. And because he is so quiet and he's come out on this lake by himself so many times, he's able to experience that solitude and probably doesn't have the he has the vocabulary, but doesn't have the language to express that special solitude to his son of why he does it. You know, when a bald eagle comes soaring down or this great fish comes out of this hole, and, you know, just he's at peace on this lake, you know, and that's where he finds solace, the father. And he's trying to bring his son into that experience, but only in the physical part. And I think one of the transitional things is Randall is trying to verbalize this experience, but he can't, so he can only show him. And I guess that goes back to the writing, the old adage about writing, show, not tell.
You've done an interesting structural thing, Jason, with this short story collection, and that is that you've interspersed each of your main stories in the collection with these kind of like even shorter short stories, and these like vignettes kind of end up telling a longer tale as the reader progresses through the book. I wonder if you might talk about this kind of story within and in between the stories that develops.
When I decided that I was going to put together this collection of short stories, I didn't want to have just a collection of 20 stories or whatever. I wanted there to be a clothesline that weaved in and out of the more traditional short stories, which were these shorter vignettes, if you want to call them that. And they deal with one character, Travis, who is a traveling musician, holed up in a La Quinta Inn and Suites, which I've spent time at, as well as Best Westerns and Courtyards and your Hampton Inns and Fairfields. And I love them all.
He feels a rather desperate sense of imprisonment, you might deduce.
Well, that's kind of his dilemma. He embraces it, and then at the same time, it fills his sort of, you know, his dilemma is a rootlessness, and, you know, going back to the title story, a transition. But at any rate, those stories just deal with him interacting with his transient neighbors.
Well, let me have you pick one of those moments in your book and share it with us. Give us a sense of who this Travis is and what he's dealing with.
Sure. This is that series of stories are called "Make Me a Palette," and they have subtitles that refer to country or blues or folk songs. So this one I'm going to read is called "Make Me a Palette," and the subtitle is "Fastest of Ponies," which is on a collection of Woody Guthrie songs that I took the title from. And this will just be an excerpt. I don't mind a 7-mile drive. Sometimes I purposely get turned around just for the sake of driving. Hancock. A hell of a long curve into Chattanooga. Then a deep cut into the Cotton Belt. Jack Rabbit Quick from Shamrock, Texas. Home of Bill Mack, the Satellite Cowboy. Late night DJ keeping truckers awake while he's penning tunes recorded by Jerry Lee Lewis, Ray Price, and the big hit Blue, warbled out by that old pussycat Leanne Rimes. Pausing at rest stops outfitted with tornado shelters, and before I know it, Tucumcari Carry and the ghost motels along Route 66. Las Vegas to L.A., no air conditioning, sweating out the dry heat of the Mojave, through Baker, where the tallest thermometer in the lower 48 confirms 111 degrees, and up the Pacific coast, dining on fish tacos and breathing in the garlic fields. I know every Wawa in the mid-Atlantic. Crackle Barrels from Altoona to Terre Haute. TAs, also known as Travel Americas, from Las Cruces to Coachella. Waffle Houses from Corinth to Ocala. Give me 24 hours anywhere and I can give you directions. I'm about to walk into the nice and easy, and a man pumping gas asks if I know how to get to Turning Stone, and I said, just up the road, 7 miles on the right, you can't miss it. I purchase American Spirits and a pack of gum. The round Latino woman at the register is having trouble ringing up my items. My fingers are not working today, she says. I pick up a big lighter with a picture of a goat and the word Capricorn, my astrological sign. Throw this in too, please. Goat, she says, chuckling. Yes, I say, removing sunglasses to reveal my black eye. It's my sign. She stops laughing and scans the lighter and gives me my total. Jesus was a Capricorn, I say as she hands me my change. Jesu Cristo, she says. Si, Jesu Cristo. Before I drank the Woody Guthrie Jack Kerouac Kool-Aid, I'd studied Lewis and Clark's expedition and the opening of the West, John Smith's boat ride up the Chesapeake in search of the Pacific Ocean. I knew of Alvar Nunez Cabeza de Vaca's 8-year ramble from Florida to the Southwest. In 1528, shipwrecked and abandoned, the Spanish conquistador wandered lost and naked through many and very strange lands, absorbing the New World and its inhabitants. A slave to natives, a refugee turned trader turned faith healer, subsisting at times only on the juice of the prickly pear as he roamed. Cabeza de Vaca sailed home to Spain with La Relación, an account of his journey, the only thing that a man who returned naked could bring back. I'm thinking about a line from La Relación when I stop at a liquor store on the way back to the La Quinta. Freedom to go wherever I wanted, obligated to nothing, and was not a slave.
Jason Tinney reading from his short story collection, Ripple Meets the Deep. Jason is our guest this week here on The Signal. And Jason, I happen to know that you write this character, this motel-hopping harmonica player from direct experience. You play harmonica in a band, and you've had these kinds of road-weary moments yourself, yeah?
Yes. All this series of palette stories are all fictional, but they're definitely drawn from real-life experiences. We played in upstate New York and stayed in hotels and motels like the one described in these stories. And, I carry notebooks wherever I go, and I just jot down observations and bits and pieces of dialogue overheard. And then you sort of sift through them at some point when you sit down at a computer and you type them up. And, you know, that's very rewarding because they're jumping points for something larger. You know, whether it's a short story or a random piece of prose or a song lyric or whatever, and it's fun to do that. But yeah, they're all fictional stories.
Listeners can probably hear when you're reading that you really kind of embody these characters. And I should say that in addition to being a musician and a fiction writer, you're also an actor. I wonder if there's a connecting logic to all these pursuits of yours, or if you just can't decide what you want to do with yourself.
Nah, I think they're all connected, and it's important for me to stay busy in these crafts. I feel very lucky to be involved in playing with the bands, the Baltimore-based bands, the Donegal Express and the Wayfarers. We've been around for more than 15 years.
And you just wrapped up a stint on stage down at the Fells Point Corner Theater.
I did. An original play written by Larry Malkus, a longtime friend, and shared the stage with Laura Malkus, his wife, a great friend who I've known for more than 20 years. And she is a singer and songwriter and a great writer of prose. And she performs in the Wayfarers with me and Brad Donnells. I'm very lucky and blessed to have so many friends that have so many different talents that I can sort of say, hey, I need a favor. Can you help out with something? But yeah, Heine Guccioms was the name of the play, and it was a lot of fun. And when I got serious about writing, I guess probably about 2004, 2005, and that's where I put my focus. So the acting took a backstage, no pun intended. And then just in the last couple of years, I've gotten back involved with it, and it's been a lot of fun. And these other pursuits sort of back up the writing, because you're able to be able to write in a way, hopefully, that when a reader reads the stories, hopefully I've written in a way that it sort of lifts it up and gives it a little bit of a cinematic kind of flavor, that it's not just words on a page, that they can really visualize it. And that also goes into the characters. And I mean, a lot of these stories take place or central to Maryland or wherever, and some of these other characters are scattered around the country, but it doesn't matter where the story takes place. It's the human condition that hopefully a reader, if you're from Oxford, Maryland or Oxford, Mississippi, can identify. It just, the scenery just changes.
Well, Jason Tinney, your short stories, they really are honest and intimate portrayals of people, you know, trying to come to grips with their pasts, their fears, their desires. They're stories full of nuance and humanity. And I just want to congratulate you on the work and thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Aaron. It's like I said, it's a pleasure to be here.
Jason Tinney's short story collection is titled Ripple Meets the Deep. It's published by City Lit Press. That's an imprint of Baltimore's City Lit Project. And you can find more about Jason online at jasontinney.com. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Henkin.
You're listening to The Signal, an original production of Your Public Radio in Baltimore.